You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The 1994 case in which a woman sued McDonald's over the burn she suffered after spilling a hot cup of coffee on her legs has come to represent the worst kind of frivolous lawsuit. But was it? Well, a new documentary called Hot Coffee, which debuts on HBO tonight at 9 p.m., tells the story behind the case and investigates the civil litigation system as a whole, including the reforms that have become a controversial political issue in Washington. Susan Saladuff is both the director and producer of the film, and I'm pleased to welcome her to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
So why do you think the McDonald's coffee case has captured the public imagination so powerfully?
Well, initially, the facts were completely distorted by the media. I mean, NBC Nightly News, on the night of the verdict, Jane Pauley was substituting for Tom Brokaw and reported to the world that this woman spilled coffee while driving and won millions of dollars. Of course, she was never driving. She was a passenger in a parked car. She never won millions of dollars. And it became sort of the poster child for what's wrong with our civil justice system.
So is this really the fault of the media?
Well, the media does have to take some blame for this, yes, because they can not only did they report it inaccurately, but then they perpetuated the myth by continuing to repeat it over and over again. But at the time, people need to know what was happening politically in the country.
So this was a reflection of certain political attitudes that were changing?
Yes, because starting in the mid-80s, large corporations knew that our civil justice system was starting to be used to hold them accountable, and that was not good for profits. So when this case came out, which was in August of 1994, President Clinton was in office, but the Congress flipped Republican in November of 1994, and Newt Gingrich became the first Republican Speaker of the House in 40 years, and he had his contract with America. And one of those provisions, of course, was tort reform or legal reform.
So was Newt Gingrich talking about this case?
Oh, absolutely. Not only Newt Gingrich, but a lot of politicians at that point were using this case as the epitome of what's wrong with our civil justice system, even though they were misrepresenting the true facts of the case.
Well, let's talk about the true facts of the case. You do lay them out in the film, and I would assume that somebody was aware of them. I'm surprised nobody was saying, well, this isn't the way things really were.
Well, actually, the Wall Street Journal did a very in-depth truth of story about it, but the media didn't pick up on the truth. They didn't even report when the verdict was drastically reduced by the judge. It's the sensationalized version, the misrepresented version, the jokes that got perpetuated.
Picked up by Jay Leno and others.
Seinfeld did a whole episode on it.
So tell us about, is it Sheila Liebeck?
Liebeck.
Liebeck. How old was she?
Actually, her name is Stella Liebeck. And she was 79 years old at the time. She was a very active person, had worked up until about a week before this all happened. She had never brought a lawsuit before in her life, a pretty conservative woman. And she was a passenger in a parked car. Her grandson was driving the car through McDonald's, ordered a McBreakfast meal through the drive-thru, and ordered a cup of coffee, one of those 49-cent cup of coffee that used to be in those old styrofoam cups with the little plastic flat top that had that little triangular thing nobody could ever open. And she wanted cream and sugar. They didn't offer to put it in there. They put it in the bag. They moved into a parking spot, and she wanted to put cream and sugar in her coffee. She didn't have any cup holders or flat surfaces in the car, so she put it on the seat and steadied it with her legs. And when she tried to open it, the cup literally collapsed because the coffee was so hot. It was between 180 and 190 degrees.
And in the film, you show pictures of her burns, and they're shocking. Were they shown in the trial?
Of course they were shown in the trial. And the jury got really upset, not only with those photographs, but with the callousness that McDonald's quality assurance representative testified to.
Did she have established, or her legal team have established, legal grounds for suing McDonald's over this incident?
Oh, of course. Not only did McDonald's know that their coffee would burn on contact, but they had paid out over 700 other claims for people who had been burned by hot coffee.
And why hadn't they adjusted the temperature until this?
Well, I guess we'd have to ask them that. I mean, I can tell you what they testified to at trial, which was they put on the Juan Valdez of coffee on the witness stand, who said coffee tastes the best at this temperature, which is why they served it at that temperature. Of course, they also admitted that no one could drink coffee at that temperature because it would cause burns on contact. I can only make an assumption, which I don't know for sure, that there had to be an economic reason why they kept it so hot. Maybe it kept longer or fresher longer or whatever, but it had to be some sort of reason.
Have they adjusted the temperature since?
The lawyer who represented Mrs. Liebeck has had a recent case and now learns that the temperature is 10 degrees cooler, which frankly is still extremely hot.
So what was Mrs. Liebeck awarded and what was it adjusted down to?
Well, first of all she wanted was the difference between what her medical bills were and what Medicare paid. And McDonald's offered her $800, which never offered any more. The jury listened to a week's worth of testimony on both sides and awarded her her medical bills and 2 days of coffee sales for McDonald's, which was a punitive damage. Punitive damages are very rare. They're not given very often, but they're given to either deter reckless conduct or to punish a company and ask them to change their behavior. And this judge in this case asked the jury to consider punitive damages. Even though she got that $2.7 million verdict, the judge reduced it to $480,000. Then McDonald's appealed. They settled. And then Mrs. Liebeck was subject to a gag order and wasn't able to defend herself when all this misinformation came out in the public.
So do we know how much she finally wound up getting?
I don't know. It was a confidentiality agreement. One other thing I do want to mention is that she was held partially at fault. She was found 20% at fault. But the jury was so angry at McDonald's for their callousness that they found them 80% at fault because they knew that they were selling coffee at this temperature through the drive-thru and that people were getting burned.
Now, a listener points out that that the food industry is also being accused of leading to obesity because of the huge portions on supersizing. And so that gets used as well to ridicule the bleeding heart liberals who are critical of this sort of thing.
You know, I really, you know, I don't comment, obviously, in the film on that type of a case. You know, we have a system that is intended to hold wrongdoers accountable. And, you know, many people try to say that there are so many, you know, frivolous lawsuits. But we really do have checks and balances in the system.
Well, one of the other cases you deal with is that of Colin Gourley. Gourley, G-O-U-R-L-E-Y, whose severe brain injury was a result of medical malpractice at birth. Did anybody call that case frivolous?
No. Not only was it not frivolous, I mean, the jury awarded $5.6 million. And in Nebraska, where this family lived, they had a total cap on all damages, whether they be medical, wage loss, pain and suffering for this child's entire life, was reduced to $1.25 million. What that means is that the jury determined that this child needed $5.6 million for the rest of his life to basically have his medical care taken care of. When these verdicts get reduced to the cap, which is this one-size-fits-all thing that legislators decide without ever meeting the family or seeing the case, then the taxpayers have to pick up the difference.
Because it gets picked up by Medicaid?
Medicaid, exactly.
So placing caps on damages is a very popular example of tort reform, isn't it?
It's almost in almost all of our states at this point.
And who usually supports those initiatives?
Large corporate interests, insurance companies primarily, because if we cap damages, then those who are held responsible do not have to pay.
But doesn't the public also generally support them? Because they think some of these lawsuits have led to incredibly outrageous awards.
What's so ridiculous about that theory is that the only time a cap comes into play is after a jury listening to both sides of the issue decides that the defendant is responsible and awards a large amount of money. By definition, that cannot be a frivolous lawsuit. And yet those are the cases the most seriously injured people are the ones whose cases are being capped. And the insurance companies who are benefiting from these laws all over the country, they don't have a requirement to give their savings back to the policyholders. And so they make more money. And you and I and our friends and our family who unfortunately might have a case at some point, we are limited in what we can bring, in what we can get. And then the taxpayers have to pick up the difference.
The film also tells the story of Oliver Diaz, a former justice on the Mississippi Supreme Court. Why was he targeted by pro-tort reform interests?
Because Justice Diaz sometimes voted for consumers and against corporations. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which most people don't know what that is, they think it's a government agency, when the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is in fact the largest lobbying organization for corporations in the world, they targeted Justice Diaz, as they did many other judicial candidates, because we now also vote for our judges, which is a bit crazy, don't you think? Because when judges have to run for election, that means they have to run a campaign and get contributions. And then how can they be completely unbiased when they're on the bench?
So is he off the bench now?
Oh, absolutely. He was targeted by the U.S. Chamber. $1 million or more was fed into his opponent's campaign, but not in the name necessarily of the U.S. Chamber, although in that particular case, they did have commercials that said it. But usually there are these front groups, like Citizens for a Stronger Community or Citizens for a Safer, never have any citizens in them. They're run through the public relations campaign, and people believe that these are citizens groups.
Well, you're an attorney, aren't you?
I am. I practice
25 So people might
years.
See you as somebody who also has a special interest in this.
You know, I'm not practicing law, and I practiced law for 25 years and lived these stories, not these particular cases. They weren't mine. And I knew the truth, and I knew that most people did not know the truth. And all I wanted to do was open people's minds that there's another point of view.
Susan Saladuff is the producer and director of a film called Hot Coffee, which will be premiering tonight on HBO at 9 p.m. You also included in the film Man on the Street interviews. Were you surprised by the responses you got?
You know, I was not surprised. Most people have no idea what a tort is, let alone what tort reform is, and yet they're being asked to vote on these issues in every election cycle.
Didn't you show some of those people the burns that were suffered by Stella Liebeck?
I did. In fact, I asked them first, did they know what a frivolous lawsuit was? And then, can you describe one? And then, of course, they would say the McDonald's coffee case. And then I said, well, if you saw these burns, and I showed them the pictures, and they just were appalled and said, whoa, I had no idea. In fact, in the film, there is an audible gasp. We've been showing it around film festivals all over the country. And when I'm in the audience, sitting there is an audible gasp in the room. Most people have no idea how serious this woman's burns were.
You also asked people about arbitration clauses. Is the average person aware of what that term even means?
No, and most people don't even want to think about it or talk about it until it affects them personally. It's sort of like anything else. You know, nobody wants to talk about these issues. They're boring. They're legal issues. Until, God forbid, something happens to you or a family member or a friend, and now it's like, oh, I don't have justice. So we are essentially signing contracts every day. We either sign them or we put "I agree" on the internet when we try to buy something. And most people don't know that embedded in these contracts in the fine print is something called mandatory arbitration or forced arbitration. And again, we don't have a dispute with this company. We don't think we're ever going to have a dispute with this company. And then we do. And what we have signed away is our rights to access the court system. Well, why should we care? What is arbitration? What does this mean? It means that the company that you're bringing this action against, that you have a dispute with, they get to pick the decision maker. They pay for the decision maker. The decision maker doesn't have to give a reason why he or she comes up with the decision. It's completely secretive, and there's no right to appeal.
And this is not just us as consumers. You tell a story of Jamie Lee Jones, who signed an arbitration clause in her employment contract before she headed to Iraq to work for Halliburton.
That's right. She was 19 years old. She lived in Houston, which, you know, Halliburton is one of the largest employers down there. And she was given an employment contract to work in their IT department. She signed it. She didn't know what a mandatory arbitration clause is or whether it would ever affect her. She was offered a promotion to go to Iraq and work as a civilian in Iraq in their IT department, and she was promised that she would live in a little trailer with another woman. When she got there, she was put in a dorm with 400 men. And she complained about it and told, get over it. On the fourth day that she was there, she was drugged and gang raped by her co-Halliburton employees. And because of her arbitration clause in her employment contract, she was unable to access the court system. They wanted her to go into mandatory arbitration, which, as I said, is so one-sided toward the corporation. There's no real criminal liability when you're a contractor in a foreign country, so there wasn't any criminal liability brought against these people.
So the men weren't held accountable?
They were not held accountable criminally because it was in Iraq, and Iraq doesn't have jurisdiction over them. And here we don't pursue those kinds of cases when it's in another country. So she didn't have any criminal prosecution brought against these men. And so she tried to pursue a case against Halliburton for putting her in an unsafe working condition and when Halliburton knew that this had happened before. And it wasn't until Senator Al Franken in the U.S. Senate brought us his very first bill, the Jamie Lee Jones bill, which was to put an amendment in the defense arbitration bill to prevent the U.S. from contracting with companies that put these mandatory arbitration clauses in their contracts in areas where people are raped or sexually assaulted or sexual discrimination. And it passed. And as a result, Halliburton dropped its appeal. And now Jamie is in trial right this minute. It took 6 years, almost 6 years, for her to get her day in court. But she is in the middle of trial right now in Houston, Texas.
But this is the odd case where tort reform actually was worked out for the person who was complaining. Usually it goes in the other direction, doesn't
it? Well, it didn't really. I mean, it took 6 years for her to even access justice, and that was only after a senator intervened. Most of the time, the rest of us don't have a choice in the matter. When we use our credit cards, when we use our cell phones, we are subject to these mandatory arbitration clauses, and we don't really have a choice.
And people are pushing for more changes. What sorts of changes are being advocated for currently in the civil litigation system?
Well, right now, just a month ago, the Supreme Court ruled in the AT&T versus Concepcion case that now corporations can put in their contracts a ban on class actions. Now, most of us, it's another term. Like, what does that have to do with me? Why should I care? So what it means is that when you sign away your rights in these contracts, if you ever have a small claim, let's say you pay your credit card bill and for some reason they charge you a $35 late fee that you don't think you're subject to, you're not going to bring a case for $35. But let's say that they did it to 2 million of us and they made $70 million off of us. We have no rights as consumers to do anything because we don't have class actions anymore if we sign away these rights. And people need to know that this is happening all over our system.
The area where we hear most about this is in malpractice, isn't it? And that's where members of Congress are pressuring the president to adjust the health care reform bill that he had passed.
Yes. And I think in January, there was a bill trying to amend it to put a $250,000 cap on pain and suffering in medical malpractice cases. I mean, $250,000 as a one-size-fits-all. I mean, you saw Colin Gourley.
That would be even less than he got.
Much less than he got, and would never be able to truly compensate a person who's had been blinded, lost a limb, lost their reproductive organs, become mentally disabled for the rest of their lives. And we're talking about cases, by the way, where the jury has already determined liability. These aren't frivolous cases.
Well, often even when a jury comes up with a huge amount, the case is appealed, and more often than not, the figure is diminished considerably. So is this just what is the argument for putting caps on things?
Well, the argument is that somehow it's going to reduce medical health care costs for all of us, or somehow it's going to reduce doctors' insurance premiums, when in fact, in those states where these tort reform measures were enacted, the doctors never get lower insurance premiums. The insurance companies just make more money.
A caller asked about gag orders and says, it seems that every time a company settles, a gag order is imposed and the public never finds out what happened.
Absolutely. There's never a gag order on the wrongdoer. It's always on the person who's bringing the case. And they put these things in and they don't really give you a choice. They say, well, if you want to settle with us, you have to agree to this confidentiality agreement. Well, by the time these cases are going on for years, people just want to agree and settle the case. And so they agree to them. And then, you know, we as a consumer don't know about things that happen that where we could potentially protect ourselves.
Susan Salduff's film Hot Coffee is premiering tonight on HBO at 9 o'clock. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.